very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is Friday, the Wintrust Business Lunch, the Friday edition. Andrea Haynes in the studio. She's the editor for Blue Sky Innovation. You read that in the Chicago Tribune or online at chicagotribune.com. A little bit later in the program, Barry Sterner will be here, the CEO of Townstone Financial. You know, the Fed was talking about raising interest rates, and they didn't do it. They're probably going to do it later this year. What's the impact on homeowners? And we'll just sort of get an idea of where we are when it comes to mortgages with Barry coming up a little bit later. And as I said, Jamie Dufek will be here. She's from NCSA, which is an outfit that will help your college student, or probably earlier, begin the process of preparing for, hoping for, a college scholarship when it comes to athletics. So we'll talk about what's involved there. But first, good afternoon, Andrea. Nice to see you again. How are you?
Thanks, Steve. Good to see you, too.
All right. So September is Productivity Month, and not really, I made that up. But you guys have been writing about productivity in the office, right?
Yeah, it's funny. We actually do internally call it Productivity Month because we focus on that topic.
It's not really, is it?
You know, again, internally, we kind of call it that. I don't know if there's a technical national holiday or anything.
Well, let's get that started. I think we should do we have the power. You have the power to
do
that.
You know, it's back to school time. I guess we all feel that urge to kind of get organized. And
I was telling you off the air, we've been throwing stuff away and updating things at our house. All right, let's go to the office then. And because you write about a number of things, and I want to talk about some of the productivity of it. But let's start with coffee, because you write about coffee at some of these companies. And what struck me is that, did I read that one of them, they have their own sort of coffee bar with baristas and everything
like that? Yes, barista in the office is definitely a thing. I think you might be holding a cup right now, actually.
I am, but I had to go to their office and get it.
Yeah, it's something we've noticed doing office tours. Every Friday we post an office tour, kind of a design focus to see some of these cool tech offices. And many of them have in-house baristas. They have kegs of cold brew, coffee, all this kind of thing. And so as we were talking about productivity, and you know, you're always trying to think of clever new things, one of the things that struck me was maybe not that clever, but something that we all rely on, which is coffee, right? We all need that before the big meeting or before the big project.
And so the idea of having great coffee in the workplace is just a little perk to keep people, or it's just kind of a fun thing to do?
Yeah, I think it's both. You know, I think there's always, we always think there's the nefarious idea that you don't want people leaving the company, so you provide everything they need right in the building so they never get to leave. I think some of us probably like to go to Starbucks for a little break. But I also think it's just a perk. You know, it saves you money, obviously. If you have young employees, especially, saves them a few dollars a pop, keeps them caffeinated and productive, and it also allows that cross-pollination.
Right, you know, it's like the water cooler.
The water cooler, where you know you might bump into people from other departments.
It's amazing how we have changed, and this has nothing to do with what we're talking about, kind of. But in our taste, you know, it used to be Europeans were all about food, and you know, and Americans weren't. They had one coffee, one beer. And we've gone through a revolution when it comes to coffee and beer and all of that stuff.
Yeah, and one of the things that the story, I think, whether you care about coffee, is just a fun read because people are so particular about their drinking. Everyone has their super precise method of exactly what they drink and how it's prepared and what they used to prepare it with. It's certainly not something you would have heard 10 years ago
or
5 years ago, probably even.
All right, let's talk about something a little more substantive, and that's the actual physical workplace and how to recognize or foster productivity when people actually want to work. I had not heard before, but you say some offices sort of have an earbud rule. If someone's got earbuds in their ear, that means they're really at crunch time, leave them alone.
Yeah, I think people use that kind of as an informal kind of signaler. Like if you turn around or you look at somebody and you see the earbuds, which I guess the new Apple earbuds might prevent that. But you kind of know they're in the zone. They don't want to be bothered right now.
Go ahead.
It just gives you a little way to do that. We had another example of somebody who had found an LED light that you can have on your computer, which is a more formal way of doing exactly the same thing, where you can literally have a red light saying, do not come near me, leave me alone, and different, you know, levels of how busy you are.
So you're having a lousy day, just put up the red light.
Yes. Not open for business.
And I've seen that. And that light also will indicate when there's new emails coming in or things like that.
Yeah, you can do a lot of things with, you know, signifiers like that.
It sounds like a lot of cash for someone who's in a bad mood.
That's true.
Tell me also about these high-tech toys. You write about Bullet Journal, which I had never heard of before.
Yeah, the Bullet Journal is hot. In fact, the Wall Street Journal recently wrote about it. It's one of the methods we found local people using, although it was a little less popular, I think, in the tech crowd because it's very much pen on paper. It's a way of sort of taking a to-do list that we all know, but it's sort of a to-do list on steroids. It has different ways of coding the different kinds of things we do in a day, because some things might be a thing you could do that day. Other things on your list might be a long-term project.
Right.
Plan a vacation. Right. You're not going to do that in one day.
It's called Bullet Now.
It's called Bullet Journaling.
Oh, Bullet Journaling.
There's a product you can buy to go with it, of course, and then numerous other products come up around that. But you can do it in any notebook. It's really more a system of symbols and organization of a notebook. So, yeah, so you're like indexing it, doing all these things. I think depending on the way your mind works, like I look at these and I freeze. I just can't imagine like it making sense to me or quite going to all that trouble to organize what I'm doing. But I think that's the thing about productivity. It's very individual. It depends on the way your literal brain works and how your day works. And, you know, it obviously works for some people.
Bullet journal. Yeah. Okay, we have a couple of minutes left, and I want to make sure we talk about the Starter League, which is something, it sounds like it's existing elsewhere, but it's coming to Chicago, or they're hoping to bring it to Chicago.
Yeah,
what is Starter League?
These are the guys who founded Starter League, who are, I would have to say, some of Chicago's most popular entrepreneurs, Mike McGee and Neil Salas Griffin. And they created the Starter League to teach adults coding. They wound up selling that company to a bigger coding school company out of New York. And in the process of volunteering for a coding program that was teaching students, they got involved with that. And now they're going to be leading this Code Now, which is teaching coding to underrepresented, you know, children from underrepresented communities. So helping teach that next generation of coders.
So get them early.
Exactly.
I mean, it's like kind of what Mayor Emanuel was talking about last night, right?
It is.
Giving kids something, an alternative to do when they're very young, when they might go, rather than go down the wrong road, find the right road for them.
Yeah, the two guys that we're talking about are African-American men, and they are like, we want to set that example. You know, it provides a different example of a different way to success.
Yeah, I misspoke then. So I was speaking of Code Now. They are in a few other cities already and hoping to come to Chicago?
Yeah, so they're based in New York. So our two Chicago guys are going to be leading it, but they're going to remain based here, and they are going to be working on raising money, because it's a nonprofit, to bring those classes here. So they need to get corporate sponsors and kind of get that going, because the sponsors will provide space to hold the classes.
Well, I hope that would happen, right? Yeah, right. So they hold the classes in the sponsor's office space.
Exactly.
That should be a no-brainer for some of these companies,
imagine,
right?
I would imagine.
All right, let's get on that. Andrea Haines, thanks for coming by today. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you. Thanks, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're going to talk about college athletics and scholarships. Maybe it's right for you or your kids.
Sports go sports. Athletics are number one. Participants are heroes. Go team, yeah.
12:35. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Let's back up. 12:23. Steve Bertrand here on a Friday afternoon. And Jamie Dufek is in the studio. She is with NCSA. Jamie, well, I had your softball card. I don't know if you knew that, right, for the Drake University. Did they have softball cards?
They did. Did you know? Man.
So Jamie played college sports, played softball for Drake. Mm-hmm. And now you work with NCSA, which is a company that families use, right, to sort of get in line for college scholarships for their athletic kids.
Yeah, so if you want to think of us as kind of the match.com of college athletics, our role is to really help student athletes as well as college coaches really figure out what is going to be the best fit for these student athletes to play collegiately.
It used to be that I always thought that if you played really well in high school that someone was watching, someone's ear would be pulled, and then a college coach would come calling, but that's really not how it works.
No, did you read my recruiting bio as well? Because that's kind of what I thought too. That is really not the case at all these days. A lot of it is really student athlete, child parent driven. College coaches just don't have enough time in the day to really go out and hunt for these kids.
Right.
So a lot of it's really just child driven.
And it's probably different when it comes to basketball or football and then the rest of the sports, right?
Yeah, each sport's a little bit different. When you talk about recruiting timelines or when you talk about, you know, opportunities, each is a little bit of a different niche.
And so what I like about the way, and we were just talking off the year, and I hadn't really thought of it this way, but in some ways, being a college athlete in one of the, I'll say, non-primary sports, which may or may not be fair. You're looking at a softball player. But,
yep, I'll take it.
Okay. It's almost a tool to make college more affordable.
Yes.
Rather than it's a tool to go to the pros, to get a full ride. You're not going to get a full ride.
Correct.
But this might be a way to get additional aid.
Yeah, so I think college athletics is, in your sport, is a mechanism to get you to the next level. So in my personal experience, softball was a mechanism to help me pay for college, absolutely. But more importantly, figure out what was going to be the best fit for me. You know, that was definitely part of the equation.
Right.
But it was more the academic driven than anything.
So are there there probably are girls who might be good enough to play college softball, mm-hmm. but because they're not being proactive, they're not getting college scholarship
attention. Yeah, there's a good chance of that. And I actually was that kid in high school that I didn't, you know, I missed out on some opportunities because I didn't seize the moment and I wasn't proactive.
Right. And so if you talked about academics, and mm-hmm. that goes back to the idea to use this as sort of a way to help getting a little bit of money to pay for school.
Yep.
You still have to get in school, so academics is pretty important.
You do. So I think basically, Steve, you know, what I tell our student athletes that I work with is it's very important to have conversations with your family, whether it be mom, dad, guardian, to really figure out and establish a baseline of what your important factors are of looking at a college.
Right.
And then obviously looking at your sport and, you know, in comparison of that as well. And then if you are really good or you have the grades, obviously, there is opportunities for financial
assistance. And you guys have a whole company out of working with families and placing them in a way.
We do.
Is that the way most college athletes are now sort of signed or?
A good chunk, absolutely. So we have helped a lot of student athletes, obviously, in the past. But I think really one thing that we do and the families that we work with find very beneficial is we are 500 plus strong former college athletes that have been through the process before. So when a family comes on and works with us, they know that they're getting the guidance of someone that's been through the process themselves.
And so when someone comes to you and says, you know, Jamie, I really want my son to play college baseball, do you say, where do you want him to play? Or do you say, well, let me find somewhere where he can fit.
Yeah, so I think the basics of what we break down is what are your important factors? What is it you're looking at academically? Where are you at GPA-wise, test score-wise? What do you want to major in? Because that's also a huge facilitator. Where are you open to location? And then we're talking through the athletic side of things.
Because you've got to get into the school first.
You do. If you can't make the grades, you're not going to be on the field.
What's the biggest mistake you think parents make?
Ooh, I would say that probably being a helicopter parent, not letting your child taking the reins. Ultimately, this is a team component. There's a lot of different factors of who's involved through this process because it's tricky, but it's got to be child-driven.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you maybe an unfair question, but mm-hmm. I think it's relevant.
Yeah.
I would assume that most of the kids who work with you, well, what percentage of the kids work with you end up with a scholarship? And I would say the answer should be pretty low, because I'm sure a lot more kids want scholarships than get them.
Yeah, so we track it in a lot of different ways, obviously. So just alone last year, we helped over 20,000 student-athletes compete at the college level. A good chunk of those student-athletes did probably receive a athletic scholarship in one way, shape, or form.
Right.
But a lot of it we also look at is what do they receive need-based? What was that total financial aid package looking like? Because there's so many other things that take into consideration.
So you're like an economic, you're like a collegiate economic advisor in some ways.
Sometimes, yeah.
That's wild. Jamie Dufek from NCSA.
Yes.
How do people get more information?
You can look at us at www.ncsasports.org. We're active on social media, so check us out.
All right, I have a junior in college and a freshman. Is it too late for me to get the athletic scholarship?
Absolutely not.
Really?
Really. I didn't make my final decision until my senior year of high school.
Yeah, no, these are in college already.
Oh, yeah. Probably a little bit. Unless they want to transfer. We help with the transfer process.
Okay. Nice to meet you. Thanks
you
very
too.
Much.
You too. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, are you looking at your pet? You got a pet at home? How much did you spend on your pet last year? Americans spent $62 billion, or at least they're expected to spend $62 billion on their pets this year alone. A lot of that money goes to Craig Wallace, who's the CEO of Siva. Oh, maybe not all of it. Craig, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
Tell me about Siva. What is Siva?
Siva Animal Health is a veterinary pharmaceutical company, and we manufacture vaccines, pharmaceuticals, anesthetics, antibiotics, flea tick medications, behavior products.
A lot of it for domestic animals or for farm animals, or I would imagine it's probably a mixture.
It's a mixture. We have a food animal division and then also companion animal.
Yeah, and so we're spending all this money. Right, I've got friends from Europe, and they look at the money that Americans spend on their pets, and they kind of laugh sometimes. How much of what we spend on our pets is money well spent? Is that an answerable question?
It is. I would say most of it really depends on the quality of care that you're looking for your pet. But as the human-animal bond has strengthened, and pets have gone from the backyard to the bedroom, then people are looking for human quality care.
Yeah.
So, and they're willing to spend money for it.
I get that. $62 billion, that's a lot of money, but the number of vet visits seems to be down, right? So how do those two mesh?
Yes, that's correct. Well, the pet visits are down. A lot of pet owners now are educating themselves on the internet. They're getting online, just like we do. We get online,
sure,
and we research information about conditions maybe that we have. People do the same thing for their pets.
Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, my personal opinion is that it's a terrific idea, that people have access to more information. The challenge is that not all of the information is accurate. And the person that is the one that is in the best position to make decisions about a person's pet's health is their veterinarian.
Right, so it's sort of a hybrid, right? Get what you can, but make sure you're getting...
Right, you want to be well-informed, just like when you go see your physician. So get as much information as you can off the internet and take that in to see your veterinarian.
Are SIVA products available generally in the big box stores or at stores, or only through a vet?
We do have some behavior products that are available through big box, but most of the products are available through veterinarians.
Why is that?
Well, we just feel, and it's a decision that we've made as an organization, that the products are used and have their best efficacy and chance of success when they come along with a recommendation from their veterinarian.
Mm-hmm.
So if people get information off the internet, or they get information from the person at the counter at one of the pet stores, it's not going to be the type of information they'll get from their veterinarian.
But you must be limiting your sales by not being available at those pet stores or big box stores.
The direct-to-consumer approach is a successful approach, and so more and more of the products, especially the ones that are not regulated through, for example, the FDA,
right,
are available for sale over the counter. And so if you're able to put those products into the retail space and go direct to the consumer with advertising, it really does drive sales.
You know, so as you're talking, I'm thinking about all the pharmaceutical sales for humans that are on TV.
Sure.
Right? Is the same sort of thing happening in the pet world?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So if you turn on the TV, you will see TV advertising for flea and tick products, heartworm medication, behavior products. So exactly the same thing is happening on the pet side.
Tell me about behavior products, because I really didn't know anything about that. I started reading about your company and what you do, like with pheromones and things like that. I just had no idea.
Yes. Well, the number one reason that pets are relinquished and maybe turned over to humane societies is behavior issues. So dogs chew, cats miss a litter box, dogs dig, whatever the behavior may be, and there are products that can modify those behaviors and reduce anxiety in both dogs and cats.
So, and these are pheromones?
Yes, they're pheromones.
The pheromones that, I think the example was, there's a pheromone that's released by a mother dog when she's nursing, right? That's comforting to the dogs.
Yes.
And so you synthetically produce these?
Yes, we synthetically produce those, and then they are available in a couple different forms. One is a collar for the dog, and then they also come in a diffuser that is plugged into the wall, sort of like a Glade diffuser.
And that works.
It does.
What's the most surprising thing you might tell me about pheromones and what they do and how they work?
The most surprising thing would be that if you, for example, a cat, if you have a cat as a pet, Feel-Away, which is our product, literally you can take a cat that has anxiety issues and is very anxious about being in a space alone, and plug one of these into the wall, and you will see a dramatic change in the behavior of the cat.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
So here in this country, too, we talk a lot about U.S. companies going overseas for tax benefits and things like that. This isn't the situation with SIVA, but SIVA is a foreign company, and you are representing them here in the U.S., right?
That's correct.
Does that make it harder for you to operate, or what dynamic does that bring into it?
We're a French-based company. We're located just outside of Bordeaux in the southwestern part of France. I have responsibility for the U.S., Canada, Australia, New Zealand. But the people that I interact with, and I travel about 3 to 4 months out of the year internationally, and the people that I interact with is an international group. And it is a challenge many times because the market here is so big and so dynamic and moves so quickly that that we have to move at the pace of the market, and the European market doesn't move at
so
the same pace.
So it's a different business culture, kind of.
Very different business culture.
So we talked about the billions and billions we spend here. Is there an equal amount of money spent in Europe? I mean, in France, or do we outspend them?
We do outspend them.
I don't know what the phrase for per capita would be when it comes to pet. But
yes.
Yeah.
Well, when you look at the companion animal market globally, a little over 50% of the global companion animal market, so for dogs and cats, is North America.
Is that right?
Wow. Yes. So most of the money is spent here. Now, you also have Europe is about 35% of it, and then the rest of it is Japan, Australia, South Korea, some of it in some of the other developing countries, China, for example. But still, it's over 50% of it is here in North America.
Craig Wallace is the North American CEO at Ceva. It was great to talk to you. Thanks for coming in today.
Yes, Steve. Thanks for your time.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN, 1253 now. The weekend is just around the corner. Barry Sterner's in the studio. He's the CEO and president of Townstone Financial. You hear him on the air from time to time. Barry, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Glad to be here.
All right, so the Fed met. Fed went home. They didn't do anything. There was talk that they might have raised interest rates. I don't think it was a surprise by the time it happened, but... you know, I was talking to Terry Savage this week, and had they increased it, I read a story that said it would affect the average person who has an adjustable rate one or another, only like $9 or $10 a month. So I mean, it wouldn't have a huge impact.
I think you and anyway. I read the same story because I printed
you read
that out.
Is that right? Yeah.
And CNBC is what they were talking about there. I mean, that's really the point. You know, the Fed controls overnight lending to banks, and I can't understand how all of a sudden the Federal Reserve got on the front page on every social media deal that I see. The average person, it's going to affect very little. If you have a home equity line,
right,
and they raised a quarter point, your next bill is going to be a quarter point higher. If you have an ARM, it's not going to really affect you until you re-up the ARM. You know, when the ARM is due, if you have a 5-year ARM or a 7-year ARM or a 10-year ARM, after that period of time, it's going to go up because you're going to have a 1-year ARM at that particular point. But for the vast majority of Americans, it's going to affect you very little.
All right, so they did raise rates a year ago in December. Which is probably when it's going to happen again.
Quarter point.
What was the impact on the mortgage rates with that raise?
Well, as you recall, everybody got scared. They thought everything was going up, and then certain events occurred, and I actually came in during one of those events when the Chinese economy supposedly was skidding along,
right,
and the whole world was coming to an end. That was before your BRIEX prediction, which you hit that one right on the head.
Right.
And, I mean, we were in a world market, and actually mortgage interest rates decreased because the Chinese market went down and our stock market went down. People went to safety. They bought bonds, and the mortgage interest rates went down.
So it's just, is it one of those things that we pay too much attention to? I mean, you know, I think as a reporter in the media, you look for things that can help you gauge, you know, where we are, where we're headed, things like
Absolutely.
That. And sometimes maybe we lock on the wrong thing. Are you saying we lock on the wrong thing when it comes to the Fed and their interest rates?
The Fed is very important. Don't get me wrong. One of the most important entities in the United States when it comes to financial policy. However, we have to consider where we're at today. Fed fund rates are, overnight rates are 0.25 to 0.5. That's 0.25 versus a zero. So they're 50 basis points away from zero. And it's a little different than maybe if you were looking at some of the past increases when there was a ton of inflation in the market and people were scared and wage growth was killing us and factories were full and all that good stuff. I think right now we have to remember we're really still at zero. Some people talk about negative interest rates, and a quarter point raised by the Fed is not going to affect mortgage rates that much. It's not going to affect the general American people that much.
You know, if you wanted to sell more mortgages, you need to get the millennials to move out of their parents' house. How do you do that?
There's something called non-occupying co-borrowers, And those are the parents that are listening to you today that are sitting there saying to themselves, Steve, I'd love to get my son or daughter out of that basement or out of their bedroom. And you can, it's the old thing that we used to call co-signing. And
right,
you can co-sign the mortgage loan, even knowing your kids may have plenty of student loan debt or credit card debt, or maybe they're not making that much money at their first job. And get them out of your house.
They're out of the house, but you're on the hook for the mortgage.
You are co-signing, yeah. So if they do not pay the mortgage, you will suffer.
And they'll
There's
take
no
the Xbox with them. I mean, what are you going to do for entertainment?
I don't know how you're going to live without the Xbox, but I'm sure you could replace it.
So tell me that again. Non-occupier.
Non-occupying co-borrower. The old co-signing thing.
Okay.
I mean, remember, we used to co-sign for cars. People used to co-sign for mortgages. It's a Freddie Mac program, and we take your income, your debt, your kids' income, your kids' debt, we put them together, and generally speaking, we hope that you make them qualify with your income and your debt.
All right, we're about out of time, but where are we right now with mortgage rates? What's the...
We're still... The 30-year fix is still under 4%. It's the mid-threes. The 15-year fixed, depending on your credit and obviously loan size, you're in the twos or very, very low threes. I mean, rates have not gone up. One of the things that's keeping rates down is the Federal Reserve has continued to buy bonds. So don't be scared. Call us at Townstone, 312-896-2110. Happy to talk to you about refinancing or purchase.
Barry Sterner, the CEO of Townstone Financial. Thanks for coming by.
I appreciate it.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.